So after it became clear that the casualties of this accident were limited to around a few hundreds of people, while tens of people were heavily injured and all the rest were curable, the main problem was to secure the population living along the Dnieper Basin. This was sort of central, very important task, and of course, water contamination measurements were carried out constantly. Immediately, various solutions were proposed for the groundwater protection. The first solution, in the development of which many experts from the State Committee for Hydrometeorology and Environmental Protection and regulatory organizations participated. An active role was played by organizations such as the Ministry of Water Resources, which wanted to build a barrier in the ground, which was the entire territory of the contaminated industrial site of the power plant. The plan was to dig trenches, fill them with concrete, and make a kind of a cube around the contaminated territory to prevent radioactive water from ever leaving the site. Initially for this plan, even Italian machines were purchased that would allow this work to be carried out at a high intensity. But afterwards, more accurate surveys, more accurate studies of the radiation conditions in the water that analyzed the migration of radionuclides in the water, along with tests of the Italian technology itself and the assessment of its performance, showed that the solution was not justified. And then, the Ministry of Water Works proposed a more effective solution: to surround the entire contaminated territory with an adequate number of approximately 1,450 wells, some of which will be measuring wells in which radioactivity of the water flowing through will be continuously measured. Then, if it was needed, contaminated water would be pumped out using special devices preventing it from reaching the groundwater. In time, this appeared to have been the most correct decision, because all the wells were built, and according to the measuring wells, there was practically no penetration of radioactive water into the depths. To this day, I haven't heard of a single case where water had been pumped out because of contamination. Therefore, a concrete barrier was built in the ground only in one place, in the most contaminated area, and that was all. The wells were in place, were monitored, and functioning. As for the cooling pond at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant, since the explosion, some of the radioactivity got into the water, so the next step was to protect the Dnieper River and the entire water basin. Therefore, the construction of dams was needed. These dams included cellite, which is a substance capable of absorbing radioactive particles and radionuclides should they appear in the water in small or large rivers. Such protective dams were built and they played a positive role. Therefore, water contamination never exceeded the maximum allowable concentrations. It must be mentioned that the Ukrainian comrades initially came up with a plan to create a bypass canal that would divert all the water from the Pripyat River away from the Dnieper River. This construction would have cost billions, and such a canal would have passed through the territory of Belarus. It would have been very expensive, but of course, it would guarantee that no contaminated water got into the Kiev reservoir. Once a commission led by Comrade Voropaev was created, they thoroughly analyzed the situation. Even before this commission was created, I had been charged with assessing this project. Based on the simplest estimates that I could make at the time, this project seemed redundant. Because with the systems of wells and dams in place, the exchange of radioactivity between the water and the sediments would not pose any significant danger to the Dnieper River. But then the commission did a much more thorough assessment and concluded the same thing as I did. Therefore, this project was rejected, and as the reality proven afterwards, the project would have been economically impractical and would not have brought any additional benefits towards protecting the Dnieper Basin. People people from Kiev took the correct measures at the time. They began to prepare for the possibility of using water from another source, from the Dniester River, to supply the city and made all possible efforts to create additional artesian wells. In case the Dnieper's water became contaminated above the normal concentrations, the city could be supplied using alternate sources of water. All the preparatory work was done in a very quick and very organized manner. All this was readied, but it didn't see any use. Because neither before the high waters in spring, neither after, the water of Dnieper Basin did not contain high levels of contamination that would pose a threat to human health. In the initial days, on separate spots of the river basin, it must be said, activity of up to 10 at the power of -8 curie per liter was found in some water samples. Secondly, sediments, including those in the Dnieper Basin, turned out to be contaminated. The most heavily contaminated sediments were in the cooling pond, besides the nuclear power plant, but also further downstream, along the Pripyat and the Dnieper River. Radionuclide content in the sediments are considerably elevated even today. But fortunately, nature itself acts in a way that sediments and mud hold the individual particles of radionuclides quite firmly. And now, thorough research is underway on questions such as whether some part of this radioactivity captured by the sediments is getting into the organisms that live in the water. This work is underway. It will take quite some while. The initial conclusions are that fish that live close to the riverbed do, without a doubt, carry some radioactivity in them, but no disturbing symptoms have been discovered. And the second situation regarding the protection of the shore and the small and large rivers, the shoreline, against the melting water in spring, carrying away various debris contaminated with radioactive elements, wood chips and pines, that fell from the contaminated forest, and which could lead to rather significant radiation damage. So the issue of protecting the rivers from these dirty objects represented a big problem, and here the Soviet Army played a big role in minimizing the possibility of these contaminated objects getting into the rivers, and in tackling the problem of cleaning and gathering contaminated objects from such highly toxic areas. It was a serious problem, and it was resolved by the army with great commitment. Since I've already started talking about the army, then I must say that from the moment when the Soviet army was charged with organizing the work, the scope of work was quite extensive. But the deployed chemical forces had to, first of all, work on scouting and establishing an area of contamination. The army was given the responsibility to work at the station itself and also decontaminating the villages, houses and the roads in a 3-kilometer radius. They did a colossal amount of work. While individual researchers had proposed various solutions for dust suppression, in the summer of 1986, one of the main problems was to prevent the spread of contaminated dust over large distances. To do this, a wide range of chemical solutions were tested. They had to cover the contaminated areas while letting water through and prevent dust emission. The creation of such formulas, their testing, and all of the organizational work required for this to be used in covering large areas fell on the army's shoulders. This work was very meticulously organized. An enormous amount of work was done by the army to decontaminate the city of Pripyat. Sometime around the end of August, September, or October, when the city was in a condition where it could be preserved, it was safe to be in, even though this didn't mean that the city could be inhabited normally, but that the city was no longer in a specific danger, was the result of the army operations in September and October. Of course, the decontamination of the premises of the first and second block in preparation for their launch, these were also areas where the army units actively participated in. decontamination of internal rooms, cleaning of the territory, cleaning of the roofs, all this was done very actively and in difficult conditions, subject to such requirements that not one of the soldiers or officers involved with this work should receive radiation doses exceeding 25 rem. Later, this dose was reduced overall, and in general, this was observed and enforced. Although, of course, there were such ludicrous and tragic cases, which I witnessed with my own eyes. One of such unfortunate cases was, for example, a situation where a group of working soldiers had only a single dosimeter carried by their officer or petty officer, and their commander estimated the radiation dose received by each soldier. These were not common, but rare cases, but it did happen. In one instance, a commander was recording higher doses for soldiers who were working well, as an incentive perhaps to work better, and as an opportunity to complete their stay in this zone faster, and lower doses for soldiers who were working poorly. But when such cases became known, a scandal broke out. Everything, of course, was changed, but unfortunately, there were such cases. I never witnessed a single case where specialists from the Soviet Army or just any USSR citizen somehow trying to do their work felt themselves forcibly recruited for difficult or dangerous work. There could be such cases somewhere, but I never saw anything like it. On the contrary, I myself had to go to the rather dangerous areas of the 4th Block several times to clarify reconnaissance data or to estimate the amount of work for certain operations, and I always had to take soldiers along for help. I always asked. When a group of soldiers was brought to me, I explained the conditions in which they would work, and I asked that I wanted to work only with those who would help me voluntarily. And there was never a case, and the number of such instances when soldiers were asked to help was high, where someone, as they say, remained in the ranks and did not step forward to enter our science team and help us to carry out various, sometimes really difficult, tasks. Here, a soldier was no different from a civilian who took part in these works. As proposed by General Damianovich, a military center was quite quickly established in the area of the accident zone to ensure that military specialists, the work of the military units on the decontamination and measurement, and any other operations that the army had to do, would not act randomly by trial and error, but more cautiously. This military center was appointed to select appropriate measuring equipment, the most appropriate conditions and choice of routes, to develop technological methods for decontamination tasks. The presence of such a military center played a large positive role, as it allowed for the work to be done quickly enough and with minimal radiation doses. Although, generally, the cumulative doses were certainly quite high due to the enormous amount of work, due to the enormous number of people involved in these tasks, but nevertheless, they were minimized by the actions of this military center that worked in collaboration with the scientific organizations of the USSR Academy of Sciences, the Institute of Nuclear Energy, and Kiev research organizations. So this center played a big part. Not only were the decontamination tasks performed incredibly quickly, the construction of the new residential villages, where the evacuees were moved, was also incredibly quick. The construction of the village Green Cape was amazingly swift. Here, the staff of the first and second block of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant were accommodated and had to work in shifts. The work was done not only quickly, but they also sought to do it with quality, and I would say with style. At this point, I want to say that particularly in the initial period, considering the tragedy of the situation, considering such despair, I would say considering the lack of technical means, lack of experience in handling such a large-scale catastrophe, confusion and uncertainty, could have easily risen in the decision-making, but it was not the case. Somehow, no matter the rank and no matter the task that people have tackled, everyone presented themselves like a finely-tuned team, especially in the initial days. The scientific part of the team, who were responsible for the correctness of the decisions, made the decisions without the support of Moscow, Kiev, Leningrad. Support in the form of consultations, in the form of various experimental verifications, in the form of the immediate arrival of any specialist that was called in. Whenever we came to some reasonable scientific decision, the leadership of the government commission was able to, with the help of the operative group or one of its members, instantly obtain all the necessary materials that we needed to carry out the relevant work in a fantastically short amount of time, literally days and sometimes even hours. I remember that on site at Chernobyl was the chairman of the State Planning Committee of Ukraine, Vitaly Andreyevich, working as a part of the operative group. He was a remarkably calm person, energetic, who would understand things perfectly even before we had finished talking. He always listened to our scientific discussions, what we would talk about, what we would need, and reacted instantly. We needed liquid nitrogen to cool down the block after we concluded that we were dealing with a cyst. He smilingly responded that the required trains had already been ordered. The same was true for all materials, say magnesium oxide containing carbon. He got them from all the metallurgical factories of Ukraine or from somewhere else, and all this tremendous amount of material was delivered. It is difficult to overestimate the work of the supply group, which was done by the chairman of the State Planning Committee of Ukraine. They simply worked miracles to ensure that all the work was carried out in Chernobyl with all the needed material, even though the amount needed was of course enormous. Along with technical materials, the huge army of people brought to the zone had to be provided with food, water, clothes, dressing areas, also laundry and cleaning had to be organized, inspections. This colossal task was organized. Even now, it's hard to imagine how. Of course, all this reminded me of the war period, which I remember from my childhood, from the memories of the military, that this logistical, organizational work was certainly as, if not more, important as the work of those people on the front lines who worked on the decontamination itself, on measurements, diagnostics, and other things. The work of providing all the needed materials, the living provisions, that played a vital role. Speaking simply of such impressions, of such observations, I cannot leave unsaid that on the very first day of my stay at Chernobyl, I was struck by two things. I am used to dealing with people in the KGB, due to the nature of their work, as people that safeguard state secrets, that organize the control of people who are cleared to work in especially secret and important jobs, who coordinate services that allow protecting all the documents, technical documentation, correspondence which ensures the state secrets are kept safe. This is how I mainly knew the KGB. However, from stories and literature, I also knew that a part of this committee was engaged in intelligence and counterintelligence work. In Chernobyl, I met highly organized, very precise young people who fulfilled the tasks assigned to them in the best possible manner. And these tasks were not easy. The initial organization needed clear and reliable communication. This was done practically within a day. On all the communication channels, they worked quietly, calmly, and very confidently. And I saw a team of young people working, led by Fyodor Alexeyevich Shcherbakov. But all of this was done remarkably clearly and quickly. In addition, they were also responsible for ensuring that the evacuation is carried out without panic, any excess that would affect normal work. And they managed to do this. I do not know how they made it happen. I still cannot imagine because I only know the result of this work. Indeed, there was nothing that impeded the organization of this unusual and difficult operation. And I was just delighted with both the technical equipment, but also the culture and literacy of this group.